Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
It's good to have you on board here on a Tuesday. Mitch Moss along with Matt Eumanns in for Pauly Howard this week, who's on vacation. We're live in downtown Vegas. Circa Resort Casino was the spot. In 15 minutes, Matt will tell you about his MVP bet that he made in the NFL. Bottom of the hour, Jensen Lewis on Major League Baseball. And here we go out to the Progressive Guest Line as a weekly guest friend of the show. Jeff Seeley joins the program. Follow him on X. He is at Cutmaker Jeff. And the Cutmaker podcast is coming up a little bit later on tonight. We have best bets on the 2025 Rocket Classic. No longer the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Hey, Jeff?
The Rocket Classic, fellas.
And that's it. Detroit Golf Club. This is a Bombers course, is that correct?
It is. Oh, yeah, you bet. This is a Bombers course for sure. This is a bomb and wedge, and hope you can make your putts on the Donald Ross green. So I expect to see 25 unders to win this week. We're definitely going to be in for another one of our shootouts, the opposite of the U.S. Open.
Jeff, have you got over the depression of the Tyrese Haliburton injury and the Pacers' loss in Game 7? Was there a hangover when you were trying to handicap this golf tournament?
Yes. And no, I have not got over it. I mean, Mitch and I were just saying off the air, I mean, I don't remember a game, deciding game in any sport of any fan that I've been a team I've been a fan of ending this way. I mean, it's absolutely brutal. And, you know, the Pacers were very live to win that game prior to that injury and really weren't afterwards. So, you know, that was awful. And, you know, now it's what happens next year. They say that re-signing Miles is a priority. We'll see how that works out. And it's going to be really interesting to see what the team looks like. I mean, I think it's going to look largely the same, assuming we have the same team coming back. And maybe we plug in, you know, another guard. I still think we'll be a top four or five team in the East. But I don't like our chances to win the East nearly as much as I would with Tyrese.
It's going to be the same team, but without Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, that's a problem. And also, the Pacers are not going to get many opportunities like that. And you just hate to see your point guard go down with a blown Achilles in the first quarter of a game 7 when you have the lead and you're playing well. The Pacers had the lead at halftime of that game and just didn't have enough offense in the second half. All right, back to golf. Rocket Classic in Detroit. Colin Morikawa, the favorite. This guy has really annoyed me over the last couple years, and I swore him off. I swore off betting him ever again about a month ago or so. Is he ever going to win again? Are you going to bet him again? I know you're not going to bet him this week.
No, I'm not betting this week, and I'm not a Morikawa guy. I don't bet him in general. And, you know, despite playing well here, Matt, you've got to have some sort of putting form here. And having lost over 10 strokes putting the last 2 weeks, I'm way out on Morikawa, and I'm out of Morikawa for the foreseeable future. I'll save him for somebody else.
All right, he's in that 12-1 range. He is the short shot, I guess, if you will, on the board, followed by Patrick Cantlay and then Bradley, who won it last week 18-1. I'm guessing you don't want to go to war with him to win back-to-back weeks. So, which golfer or two near the top of the odds board are you going to go to battle with this week?
Yeah, guys, for me, the first one is Cantlay at around 16-1. Any models you run, he's pretty much the clear number one, and probably 80% of them. Has a T2 finish here in his only appearance, has gained off the tee in 9 straight, has gained on approach in 10 of his last 12. Putting's been up and down, but doesn't have any awful putting performances since February. So he's been T13 or better in 4 of his last 6, and it's really easy to make a case for him at top 10 plus 160, which I think is probably my favorite bet of the week. But I can certainly see him contending outright. And then another guy, it's too bad Pauly isn't here because this is one of his favorite guys. I think this is a week I'm going to add Ben Griffin to the card at around 22-1. The knock against him would be that he hasn't finished better than 31st in his 2 trips here, but you could also argue that he's a very different guy right now. So his stat profile since May 18th is honestly staggering because, A, it includes 2 of the majors. He's only lost strokes in 1 of the 6 core statistical categories over the past 5 weeks. So in other words, he's gained in 29 of 30 possible categories over the last 5 weeks. And even more interesting, he's 19th in this field on Donald Ross greens, which can be a unique animal in and of themselves. So his putting has been great otherwise as well, gaining 4.5 strokes over the last 5 weeks. He should play right into his hands. I could make a case for him to be the favorite this week. So I'm certainly going to play him. First thing I'm going to do is look at matchups. I'm going to play him any matchup where he's a dog or he's 110 or 115. I'll be playing him there, and then I'll certainly have some outright on Griffin this week.
Yeah, Ben Griffin's been really impressive in the two majors. He disappeared last week, but maybe that's a good sign for this week. He resurfaces at the Rocket Classic here. I can't argue with that play at all because you get value on a guy who's really got the arrow pointing in the right direction, talking about Ben Griffin. I might argue a little bit with this next play. You've got Cameron Young.
Your favorite guy.
Not my favorite guy anymore. I've bet him very rarely in the past year. It used to be I've lost on Cameron Young at 100-1, 120-1, 120-1 when he finished second three times. It's brutal. And I don't know if he's going to get over. He's kind of the Tommy Fleetwood on the PGA Tour in terms of American players. Cameron Young, why do you like him this week? And you're going to make a case for him at 28-1.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, you aren't going to get a better spot for Cameron Young. I mean, I built my – if he doesn't do it this week, then maybe he is Tommy Fleetwood because I built my first-grade model, really simple model this week, and when he came in number one. When you look at things, his number one thing that used to be his biggest weakness was putting, right? And he's gained 3, 8, 5, 1, 1, 5, and 1 strokes putting over his last 7 events. He's generally very strong off the tee. Wedge play has been fairly average lately, but good enough that it shouldn't hurt him. 2 top fives in his last 3 events and in a course where he's finished T6 and T2 in 2 appearances. So really good recent form, really good course form. I mean, he's a bomber with a white hot putter. I think he's a perfect ladder play. Top 30, top 20, top 10, top 5, all the way up. I'll play him some of the each way markets. I'm going to be heavily invested in Cameron Young just this week, just to watch him finish T13.
All right. Your same approach with Harry Hall. By the way, he's 30-1. That's in the same neighborhood as Siwoo Kim and Hideki Matsuyama this weekend.
It is. And isn't it nuts? I mean, a lot of people haven't even heard of Harry Hall. And so when I first ran my model and I saw how well he graded out, I got excited thinking he'd be around 50-1. And I looked at this price and everybody else figured out the same thing. So part of it is his form is tremendous. 2 top 10s, 2 more top 20s in his last 7 events. And has not finished worse than 33rd in those. His weakness is not, he's not a huge gainer off the tee, but he's an excellent wedge player and a great putter. I don't love his tournament form here. It hasn't been better than, you know, than 30th or so, but he's a good putter on Donald Ross greens. I like him top 20. That's the way I'm going to play him. I'm going to play him plus 130, top 20, and then maybe a little few bucks on the outright.
Believe it or not, Harry Hall played golf at UNLV.
Yeah, I believe that.
A lot of people don't know much about him, but he's a former Rebel. How about Davis Thompson, former Georgia Bulldog? He's got good course form here. This is a player I keep waiting to take the next step. Could he take it on a course like this? I don't see him on your write-up this week, but what are your general thoughts about Davis Thompson?
You know, so Matt, he's a guy that I've been on, but every time I'm on, he's terrible.
Right.
So a lot of the models this week, I think, you know, he grades out in general and my overall models like top 20 around 18, 19. But then when I just ran a super simple model, just looking at wedge play and putting, for whatever reason, he graded out 125th.
Wow.
So there was a huge disparity there. And, you know, he did finish second here a while ago and then in T24 a few years before that. So he's got decent course form. Just looking at driving and wedges, though, really kind of threw me off him. So I can see a case for him, but there's just other guys in that price range. I'll tell you who's a similar price range who I like better is Max Dreiserman. You know, he's a driving and putting guy, but he's sixth in the field in Donald Ross Green. So he's a guy you might look at in the same range as Davis Thompson, and you could probably get a pretty good price on Dreiserman against Thompson in a matchup.
All right, very good. You have a couple of bombs this week, too, in the 80-1 range. Who do you like there?
Guys, anytime I can get Jake Knapp at 80-1, especially first round leader in a weaker field, I'm going to take it. Grades around 20th in every one of my models, so I'm going to play him top 20 at plus 250 or better. But I'm for sure going to play him first round leader, and I'm going to bet him to be low round in every round of the tournament. Anytime there's a course where you can go low, we know Jake Knapp can do it. Good, very good driver of the golf ball. Can get hot with the putter, so I like Jake Knapp at 80-1. And then another guy, Rico Hui, really badly mispriced me this week. 80-1 for a guy who finished T6 last year. Very strong off the tee, top 10 off the tee, top 3rd in the field with his wedges. And the upside is he shouldn't have too many long putts with these short greens. And he's proven he can putt here, gained 6 strokes putting here last year. So if he can somehow come close to replicating that putting performance, I think he's an amazing value at 80-1.
All right, very good. Jeff, we have about a minute left here. WNBA play tonight as well. State your case for the Fever.
So it's interesting. The Fever over the last two games have been 100. They've beat their opponents 120-113 in the first three quarters. They've lost the fourth quarter 69-38 in over two games.
Wow.
And they're 0-2 in those games. So I'm playing the Fever first half tonight, +1.5. I think after two straight losses, I think they're going to come out very motivated. And maybe if they blow it again in the fourth quarter, I guess we'll see. But I'm going to ride the hot first hand, and I think they'll have a motivated team. I'm playing the Fever first half, +1.5.
All right. You can follow Jeff on X. He's at Cutmaker Jeff, and the Cutmaker podcast comes out a little bit later on tonight. He was on the Progressive guest line. Thanks, Jeff. Good luck this week.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
There you go.
Quick note on the Indiana Fever. Everybody goes berserk when Caitlin Clark has those big games. She knocks down 30-footers, and she's going crazy. She played in Vegas over the weekend against the Aces. She shot 1-for-10 from three and had 8 turnovers. Awful.
Not a peep.
Didn't hear much about it.
Not a lot.
1-for-10 from three, 8 turnovers.
I'm glad I was out of town this weekend because I couldn't believe that the Aces were favored in the game. I would have lost money on the Fever. And up next, Matt has made a bet on the NFL MVP. We'll run down trends over the years, and Matt will explain his reasons for his bet next here on VSiN.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Talk some best bets in baseball coming up in 15 minutes. VSiN host Jensen Lewis will join the program at that time. What does he expect from this rookie phenom starting tonight for the Cincinnati Reds? Let me give you some trends here because you, again, you have a bet in the Pro Football Betting Guide coming up a little bit later on this week that's going to be available to people who subscribe. And some trends, Matt. It seems to me like you're not a big awards better, though.
Not many.
Okay, but do you get involved typically with the NFL?
Sometimes, if I see something I like here. And first of all, with the one we're going to talk about, I thought this was kind of a way to bet on the player instead of the team when I'm tempted to bet on the team, but I think the player is a better bet, if
okay.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So some trends going into this year with this award. The last four winners have entered the season with odds of 14-1 or lower. Right now, there are 5 players who fit that bill. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and Jaden Daniels. That's the list. 4 players have won the last 7 MVPs. Rodgers, Mahomes, Lamar, and Allen. 30 of the last 37 winners were on Super Bowl teams with Super Bowl odds of 30-1 or lower.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly 14 teams have odds of 30 or lower this year. The last 8 winners have been on a team with a preseason win total of 8.5 or higher. And 24 of the last 26 winners. A quarterback has won the award 12 straight years, and 11 of them won at least 12 games. And since 1990, the MVP's team finished outside the top 10 in points per game only twice. Peyton Manning in 2008, Adrian Peterson in 2012.
It sounds kind of like the Heisman Trophy. A quarterback's going to win the award.
And
it's going to be a quarterback on a team that wins a lot of games.
And it's going to be one of those 5 that I talked about, I'm mm-hmm. guessing.
And I think it's going to be Joe Burrow. And that's my bet here, Burrow +650. Now, I like the Bengals, and I want to play the Bengals. But, Mitch, when you look at the competition in AFC, we talk about the Bills, the Ravens, the Chiefs, Broncos, just go on down the line here. What's the one thing about the Cincinnati Bengals you absolutely do not trust at all?
The defense.
The defense, which ranks below average to bad in pretty much every category. Uh-huh. Trey Hendrickson, who is your best player, the sack leader in the NFL, you're going to screw around with him, and he's unhappy with his contract. So the best player on the weakest aspect of your team is unhappy right now because the organization is kind of a clown show. Well, this offense is as good as it gets, and Joe Burrow is too. Bengals offense ranked number 1 in passing last year, 273 yards per game, 6th in scoring, 27.8 per game. I think it's going to be better this year. Burrow led the NFL in passing yards, 49-18. Touchdowns, 43. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hits 5,000 and threatens 50 this year. When you got Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and Chase Brown and all the weapons you have on that Cincinnati offense, I'm not sure there's a better offense in the league.
Might not be, right?
But they've got to be good, and they've got to put up big numbers because the defense is one of the worst in the league.
You know, people are making a case for him to win the MVP last year despite that, what, 9-8 record?
Well, when you have 4,900 passing yards and 43 touchdowns, you compare it to what Josh Allen did and what Lamar Jackson did, you could certainly make a case for Burrow being worthy of the MVP last season.
He can't control how bad the defense is.
But the Bengals didn't win enough games to get him there.
Sure, right? That's exactly right. And he had to overcome the bad defense like every single game. And Buffalo's defense, certainly a lot better. Same thing, Baltimore, obviously, way better than that. So plus 650 in that range for him to win it, huh?
I think it's worth a shot. I actually, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, I think those are the top two candidates. Josh Allen won it last year. I don't think he's going to win it again. I don't think Mahomes won. By the way, Patrick Mahomes' numbers have really declined the last couple of years.
Right.
It's not talked about much, but the numbers have really dropped off. And Justin Herbert's not going to put the ball in the air enough to win MVP because the Chargers are going to be so ground-oriented. If you look at the other quarterbacks, you say, who are the two most likely guys to win MVP? To me, it's Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
And Burrow at plus 650, I think it's worth a play here. And I like the Bengals, and I'm tempted to bet on the Bengals in the futures. But the defense bothers me so much. I said, okay, this is going to be my way of playing the Bengals. I'm going to play Joe Burrow to be MVP at plus 650.
All right. There are two other guys maybe a little bit lower on the list where I could see them sneaking into the conversation.
Who's that?
One would be Jalen Hurts, and he's 17 to 1 on the screen right now, but also you can find him like around 20 to 1.
Yep.
Like there's an angle there where, I mean, you can't deny how many touchdowns he might score again this year on the ground and in the air. Combine both. And,
sure.
You know, I think the Eagles are going to come back to the pack a little bit. I don't expect him to win 14 games again this year, but they'll be very good. Yeah. I mean, their roster is awesome yet again, and he might score 15 touchdowns on the ground because it's so effective near the goal line. And the other guy, and this might, you know, get a couple of chuckles in the back, but I think that the offense that they have surrounded Baker Mayfield with in Tampa Bay is going to be borderline elite. And you go out and they're already going to be so good on offense, and you draft a wide receiver in the first round. And Bucky Irving came on last year like gangbusters, and he was outstanding, and he's a truly elite back already going into his second year. I think Mayfield's numbers can be astronomical this year, and maybe there's an angle there to where the Buccaneers win 12 games that division, and like, oh, look at that, Mayfield is, you know, has a chance to win the award like in December.
You know what surprised me when I looked through the spreadsheet? We have all the analysts at the network picking the division winners and playoff teams, and when I put mine in there, there were no Buccaneers picks on the chart. It was Falcons across. I was like, where's the love for the Buccaneers?
Yeah,
they win this division basically every year.
Pretty much.
And I like Baker Mayfield, too. I'm a big fan. The one thing you can nitpick against him is he throws too many picks.
For sure.
And his interception number is going to be higher than what Joe Burrow's numbers are. Burrow and Lamar Jackson had phenomenal numbers, like historically good numbers in TDs and interception ratio last year. Baker Mayfield's going to throw more picks than those guys throw. He's more of a gunslinger, takes a lot of chances, puts some balls up for grabs. That's one thing there. But I'm surprised that the Buccaneers were not more popular in terms of being a pick to win the division.
I noticed quite a few Falcons picks in there as well. I mean, I like the idea of Atlanta here with Michael Penix moving forward, but it's not going to be enough for me to pick them to overtake the Buccaneers in that division.
Right.
I can't do that. So clearly you like the Bengals more this year than Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And you know, I don't dislike Pittsburgh, believe it or not. You're going to hear a lot of skeptics about the Steelers out there over the next couple months.
Oh, that's absolutely going to pop for sure.
Right.
So this was early.
I actually like the Steelers.
Do you? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll get your thoughts on that coming up in a second here. By the way, could this be it? One and done here for Aaron Rodgers in a Pittsburgh Steelers uniform. He was on ESPN earlier today and asked if this is his last season.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is it. You know, that's why we just did a one-year deal. Steelers didn't need to, you know, put any extra years on that or anything. So, you know, this was really about finishing with a lot of love and fun and peace for the career that I've had. I mean, I played 20 freaking years. You know, like, it's been a long run. I've enjoyed it. And what better place to finish than in one of the cornerstone franchises of the NFL with Mike Tomlin and a great group of leadership and great guys in the city that, you know, expects you to win.
You buying that, Matt?
couple things there. One, does Pat McAfee wear the same shirt every day when he hosts that show?
I think, doesn't he wear the tank top quite a bit?
He wears the tank top.
Yeah, okay.
He's got like two shirts.
I think so.
It's always like the same type of shirt. Anyway, no, I don't buy anything Aaron Rodgers says. I think he's full of crap more often than not. First of all, you're doing a one-year deal, but if things go well, you're going to come back and play again next year.
Of course.
Right? Of course. See, when people think, well, this is it for me. Last dance. Well, not necessarily. I think if he plays well, he's coming back. And I think the Steelers team's got a better chance than a lot of people will give them. I actually, the offensive line has improved. I love the draft. I thought they knocked it out of the park in the draft. And you let Najee Harris go, but you bring in a stud running back from Iowa who's going to be just as good or better. And I still like the defense, too. I think it's one of the better defenses in the NFL.
You have them plugged into the playoffs this year?
I did not, but that was a decision that I really wrestled with because the Steelers, I think, are close to being a playoff team, but I couldn't quite get there. Man, that AFC is so stacked from top to bottom.
Very difficult to, like, come up with the seven teams that are going to make the playoffs.
I mean, you could easily make a case for about 11 teams to be a playoff team.
A lot of them. I had 9 teams in the NFC as well.
NFC's improved.
More than I thought.
And you have to respect it more after the Eagles led the Chiefs 34-0 late in the third quarter in the Super Bowl.
No kidding.
And that's why I think you go back and you look at the Rams and say, damn, the Rams gave the Eagles their toughest game and could have knocked them off in the playoffs.
Oh.
Had a first down at the 21-yard line the final 2 minutes. Stafford gets sacked, throws the ball out of bounds on fourth down. Didn't get enough criticism for that, by the way.
Yeah, no, I know.
So but still, 6-point loss to the Eagles in Philly in the playoffs in the snow, 28-22.
Right.
That's when I started to think, man, this Rams team's really on the rise. Thought that before. I like the young defense, but there's a lot going on there. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet and VSIN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 of first bet to trigger the $500 try. You receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VSIN completes the try with a free pro subscription through August 31st, a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet and VSIN. Go to vsin.com/GBank, vsin.com/GBank, a one-time promotion limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply.
This is Follow the Money on VSIN.
Talk some Major League Baseball here as VSIN host Jensen Lewis joins the program. His show is called VSIN by the Books, along with Dave Ross, weekday mornings at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Right here on VSIN. And Jensen, good to talk to you as always. How are you, my man?
Everything is good. Great to see you, boys. Matty, good to catch you again. Burning the oil at both ends, buddy. I love to see it.
Oh, you are too. Yeah, you were up early this morning doing a show, and here you're back in the afternoon pouring the double, we call it the doubleheader on VSIN. Yeah,
that's right.
So I think most of the country is experiencing some pretty hot, humid, muggy conditions. That's obviously going to impact some of these baseball games. And now we're starting to see a lot of runs scored, maybe more home runs on a daily basis. I think I have 9 of the 13 outdoor games tonight are expecting temps in the 80s or the 90s. What is that going to be like tonight in Cincinnati for this rookie phenom, Chase Burns, who was making his first start in this ballpark, by the way, against the Yankees?
Welcome to it. Baptism by fire. Only worst place I think he could be would be Yankee Stadium, just knowing how the ball travels there. And ultimately, Mitch, very excited. Not many times that you kind of circle the calendar and say, all right, this is a game you'll want to watch. Of course, tomorrow with Mizorowski and Skeens, that'll be one as well. But tonight, it's power on power, guys. This is exactly what you want to see. I jumped on the over 9, Mitch, earlier in the day. I know it's up to 9.5 in many spots now. And to your idea about the heat and humidity, we're up here in Northeast Ohio. The Guardians will be home against the Blue Jays tonight. They're calling for low 90s, but with an excruciating amount of humidity here. And traditionally, this time of year, the ball starts to really travel to right center field there at Progressive Field. Great American Ballpark, it's going to be going left, right, and center. So I would fully expect that the Yankees try and take advantage of the high adrenaline, you know, and the nerves, obviously, for a major league debut. They're really good at always being able to work high pitch counts early in games. So anxious to see how Chase Burns counteracts that.
You know, Mitch and I talked about that early in the show. So Chase Burns, guy's got a fastball around 97, hits triple digits. He's got a pretty good slider and a changeup suspect here. I think the Yankees are going to, like you said, work pitch counts, try to drive his pitch count up tonight. He's probably sit on the fastball. If you had to predict a pitching line for Chase Burns when he's finally pulled from the game tonight, what's it going to be? How many pitches? How many innings? How many runs? How many pitches?
Maddie, I was really dancing with the devil of being able to put Burns in with a strikeout parlay with Tarek Skubal, you know, today, and Carlos Rodon, ironically, going up against Rodon today. I think if he gets through five innings, it's an absolute gem. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be more conservative here. I would say four innings, four strikeouts. I could see him giving up three or four runs just with the elements around him. And the thing that I'll be keyed on first and foremost, guys, is the fastball command. He can pitch up in the zone because he does have the high velo, and he really maintains play well with that. If he's got some super, super depth on the breaking ball to start, then I like his chances maybe for more swing and miss. But he's got to pitch ahead in the count. He's got to be very economical early first time through the lineup, and I think that ultimately dictates how long he'll go.
I notice on the picks page at VSiN.com, you have a couple of bets on the Braves-Mets game tonight. But I want to start with this before we get those picks. The Braves opened up roughly as a $1.45 favorite in this game. Here at Circa, they're down to $1.30. So they're taking some sharp money on the Mets. Do you agree with that?
I could see that. And just kind of knowing that some of the history of these Mets bats against Spencer Strider, it that doesn't shock me. The over nine was a play for me. And I also attacked a couple of player props, guys. Brandon Nimmo has absolutely owned Spencer Strider in his career. Got his two or more total bases at plus $1.30. Ron Acuna Jr. just absolutely on fire here. We had CJ Nikowski does a great job on the Braves television side, just talking about his resurgence and there's no tentativeness for him at the plate right now. He's not going to steal a bunch of bags. Going to be very mindful about the lower half there. But I also took his two or more total bases. I got that at $1.35. Anxious to really see here where Strider, you know, there's been points, guys, where you talk about a high pitch count. He's kind of gotten in his own way a couple of times, but I do think that he finds his way back into a little bit of a groove. Now, can he get there before the Mets bats are able to capitalize? Doesn't shock me. You see a bit of the sharp money coming in on that.
Jensen Lewis, if you're a VSIM pro, he's got plenty of plays for you every day. Did you see how many plays he posted
I'm
today?
Looking right now. Yeah.
Okay. He's
17.
Some days Wes Reynolds is jealous of how many plays Jensen puts up on the VSIM Pro page. All right. Hey, I want to ask you about Justin Verlander. He's made 11 starts for the Giants, who are 10 games over 500, by the way. Giants playing pretty good baseball. Verlander has yet to get a win for the Giants. Tonight, he's home. Big price here if you want to lay it, minus 170, total of 8. His numbers are not bad. He's pitching okay. What's your handicap of Marlins-Giants in San Francisco?
Yeah, right back to Maddie, the player prop side here. Rafi Devers hitting over 500 in his career against Cal Quantrill. I took him for a run scored tonight at $1.20. Actually, don't even mind if you want to jump on his two or more hits, runs, RBI prop. Just sometimes you have guys that see opposing starters extremely well. That is the case with Rafi Devers. So I could see a crooked number early potentially to help out Justin Verlander. It is fascinating, guys, to see JV not be able to at least get a win next to his name this deep into a season. Not used to seeing that just with his track record overall. But Giants with arguably the best bullpen in baseball right now, just a handful of games back at the Dodgers. I don't think anyone on their bingo card had that one happening here into the final week of June, but love to see it. And I'm hoping that the Giants continue on this path. I think Buster Posey has that team aggressive right now in the front office. Really like the makeup of that group here moving forward.
So overall on the season, and we'll get into this A's-Tigers game here tonight, is Luis Severino going for the Sacramento A's against Tarek Skubal and the Detroit Tigers. This is in Detroit tonight, and Severino on the year has not allowed a home run on the road. He has a sub-1 ERA. And meanwhile, his numbers in Sacramento in that minor league park are hideous. And right, maybe he's just, it's too hot there. Maybe a small park kills him and it's going to be bad like that all year long. And meanwhile, this road story might continue. I was trying to make the case for maybe like grabbing plus 1.5 runs tonight with the A's at plus money, the ultimate like plug your nose game, especially against Skubal. But you think we're going to get runs in general, yeah?
I do. Just some of the trends, and Mitch, this is now at a point in the season where you can kind of look at a large sample size in many different categories. One we did this morning on our Daily Diamond on VSiN by the Books, teams with a 1 day of rest, you have the top two teams to the over here matching up against each other in the Tigers, in the Athletics, and it is by comfortable margins here. I believe the Athletics with a day off are to the over and a perfect record. It is 7-0 or 8-0 by almost an average of 3 runs. And the Tigers, by contrast, are very similar in that regard. So also, and keep this in mind, guys, we move forward. Tarek Skubal's average fastball velocity has actually started to decrease start over start the last 4 to 5 starts. And if you're looking for any, you know, maybe cracks in the armor here for the Cy Young case, that is something I will be monitoring as we move forward here. You mentioned the heat here in the Midwest. Anxious to see if AJ Hinch has maybe a quicker hook, just kind of knowing that you've had some workloads here now for the Tiger ace the last month or so, and you need him not only for the rest of the year, but also potentially what they hope is a long October run. I still think he can generate plenty of swing and miss tonight. I did buy down on a strikeout parlay with him and Carlos Rodon, 6 or more each at $1.45, and then jumped it up to 7 each for plus $1.54. So I do think this is one where we do get some runs. I don't know if they're crooked numbers early, but potentially could sneak this one over late.
Hey, Jensen, when you were pitching in the majors, were you betting on these games every day? Just kidding.
All right, so I was trying to get fantasy football trades done for the bullpen. I can tell you that.
I believe that. Hey, one for me here, last one. Garrett Crochet goes for the Red Sox tonight, minus 160. Total is 8. Anderson for the Angels. Last night, Red Sox pitchers walked 11. What do you expect from Garrett Crochet tonight? Red Sox at 40-40 after they traded Devers.
Yeah, I was very happy with my Angels money line last night. I wish I would have waited to live bet it when they were down 3-0 in the first inning. But, you know, all's well that ends well here. I do think Crochet finds a way to stymie this Angels offense tonight. And I believe I'm on the under right now, and I'm probably going to look towards a Red Sox money line and maybe an alternate run line for them at -1. Just kind of two cracks at the apple here. I think the Crochet, if you're looking for potential Cy Young pivots from Tarek Skubal, he's a great one to do it, albeit not going to be a huge payout there, but it just feels like from a physical stature that he's primed to kind of continue this crescendo up, guys. Anxious to see what he does. And a couple of guys, Joe Adell has swung the bat really well, Zach Neto as well, Logan Ohapi. If Cal Raleigh hadn't been putting up the numbers that he has, we'd be talking about Logan Ohapi as maybe the best catcher overall offensively and defensively in the American League.
On that note, is Cal Raleigh going to shock the world and win the MVP?
Buddy, if I had a vote right now, you tell me who means more to their club. You take Judge off the Yankees, they're probably still okay. You take Cal Raleigh off this team right now, there ain't no way the Mariners are in contention.
I totally agree. All right, pal. Thanks for the time. Good luck tonight, okay?
Anytime. Thanks, boys.
There you go. Catch Jensen weekday morning, 7 a.m. Eastern time with Dave Ross on VSiN by the Books, and he joined us on the Progressive Guest Line.
It's always a tricky argument. Who means more to their team or who's having the best season? I think the MVP is going to be who's having the best season.
It probably will boil down to that. You also,
but Raleigh's got a shot.
He plays that position of catcher. I mean, that has to mean something, you would think, right? Evidently, there's a report out now saying that teams are showing significant interest in a star player in the NBA. We'll tell you who next.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
You know, Matt, some reporters have been like speculating for a long time that this is going to be the craziest NBA offseason in terms of player movement that we've had maybe ever. And you're like, well, how many big names are actually going to be on the move? Well, we saw the trade last night happen where Jrue Holiday's dealt to Portland in return for Anthony Simons and some picks. And that might not be it for the Boston Celtics.
Jaylen Brown.
I think it might be possible here.
So the Celtics next season could have no Tatum, no Brown.
No Holiday.
And no Holiday. Well, Holiday, I understand.
And maybe Porzingis, too.
And Porzingis, I've heard, is rumored to maybe be headed to San Antonio. There's some teams that have interest in Porzingis. I saw that early today.
Wild.
That the Spurs Spurs are showing interest in acquiring Porzingis. This might be a total rebuild, tear down a rebuild of the Boston Celtics roster, brought on by the Jason Tatum Achilles injury, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no doubt.
And there were going to be some things that had to happen with the Celtics anyway. They've got so many big contracts, and they had to maneuver a little bit. Brad Stevens has work cut out. For now, it looks like it might just be a total remake.
Which is amazing, considering they won the title last year.
Last year. At this time, they were having a parade in Boston.
And they exactly right. And they signed all these guys to huge contracts. Like, okay, this is going to be a thing for a long time. And, oh, maybe it's not going to go that well for the team moving forward. This is Sham Sharina on with the Stephen A. Smith Show a little bit earlier today, talking about significant interest in Jaylen Brown.
The Celtics prefer not to trade Jaylen Brown and Derek White. But listen, the offers that they're getting right now and the conversations are going to be had, does it reach the value? And that's the question. So you're looking at a lot of potential movement around the Celtics. And last night was just the start of that.
Shams, are you telling me there's a whole bunch of people out there as suitors for Jaylen Brown, even though he's in the midst of a $304 million contract?
There are multiple teams that have significant interest in Jaylen Brown. And you think about, for sure, the contract is steep. I understand it. But listen, there are teams, especially in today's NBA, especially in the Eastern Conference, and now what we're seeing in the Western Conference too, it's an arms race in the West. So even if you're a team that's meddling in the playoffs, you're trying to get there, you're trying to make a swing. And I think what we're going to see now in both conferences is a lot of activity.
I got to tell you, Jaylen Brown, I've done it. This is a guy that I've done a 180 on. When he first signed the contract, I called it the worst contract in all of sports. And he went out last year and he played like that in the playoffs. And I totally tipped my cap to the guy. I'm like, damn, dude, that was awesome. He won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, followed up by winning the NBA Finals MVP. So he proved me wrong with that comment. If Jaylen Brown goes to the right team as like the second fiddle, and I happen to be in on my phone, see the news break, apps are available, I would actually consider the right team making a bet on them to win it all next year.
I'll tell you where I'd love to see him go. Denver Nuggets.
Oh, my God. That would be for sure.
I think that would be a great fit. Brown with the Nuggets. That's saying a lot, man, saying that that's the worst contract in all of sports. There's some terrible contracts out there.
Well, remember when he first signed that deal, he never played like he did last year in the playoffs, and he couldn't dribble left.
He's got some problems with the ball handling. Yeah. No question about it.
And it just bothered me every game.
Far from the perfect player. I think he'd fit in really well with the Nuggets, though.
Yeah, I think that would be the – I mean, and the Nuggets right now are 10-1 to win the West. See, that's a cut, right? Like, what would they have to give up to get that guy? If it was the right move, and again, I can make a bet before the – I'm hypothetically speaking here – before the books would adjust the number on the Nuggets, they're 10-1 at some spots to win the West. Like, I would easily take that number.
I would take that, too. Hey, one of your favorite TV shows was Two and a Half Men, right? Wasn't it?
No.
Didn't you love that show?
No, I did not.
I heard you say that at one point.
That was
you
not
and Paul
me.
Howard would get together and watch that show.
Yes.
The Nuggets had Two and a Half Men, and they took the OKC Thunder to seven games. Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
They had two players you could count on pretty much in every game, and sometimes a third would...
You didn't
surface.
Know who the third guy was going to be, but.
So if they could take the Thunder to seven, make some improvements to that roster here in the offseason, I still like the Nuggets. You still have the best player on the planet.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Minnesota would be intriguing because there was a lot of talk about that team adding Kevin Durant. But it would depend on what they would be willing to give up. And then, obviously, Boston, they don't want to take on any contracts right now. So that's going to be tricky because you're going to have to match some of the stuff up a little bit anyway to make the deals work. How about the 76ers inside the division?
Jeff Sherman at the Westgate Superbook. I assume Ed Sammons made the same bet. These guys bet the Sixers almost every year. Maybe one year they're going to get it right. Ed was nailed it with the Eagles last year. He had that.
Yeah.
He had the best number on the planet on the Eagles at 21 to 1 to win the Super Bowl. The Sixers, I can't buy into Paul George. I can buy into a lot of what Philadelphia's doing. But here's the thing. When you look at the East right now, it's kind of like a blank canvas.
Oh, there's going to be bedlam next year.
It's wide open.
Yeah.
And that's not a cliche because this East is going to be wide open. The Knicks can't find a coach.
Which is just laughable.
The whole scenario is embarrassing for the Knicks. And that's saying a lot because the Knicks are used to being embarrassed. But the East is wide open, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. I mean,
I don't love the Cavs, even though they had such a great regular season. I'm still having trouble buying into the Cavs. You can make the injury excuse all you want. Maybe by default you make the Cavs the favorites right now in the East, and that's the numbers of DraftKings make the Cavaliers the favorites. I understand that, but I think they're a fragile favorite.
So do I. Look, I can get on board with the Pistons at 16-1. I don't hate that. There are some teams down the list as well that, okay, you know, maybe a couple things go their way. Even like the Bulls, like if they could stay healthy, they were not a non-playoff team, but they made the play-in last year with the emergence of Josh Giddey. What if he's going to be like a walking triple-double next year? They're 130-1 to win the East. Like, there's going to be a team at the bottom of this list that, no doubt in my opinion, will make the playoffs next year. And they might be a 4 or a 5 seed. Mm-hmm. And that could be somebody like the Bulls or the Raptors or somebody way down on that list. And I'll tell you the team that has just completely botched everything here now for the last 4 years, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, yeah.
With everything going sideways right now in the East, how are they not set up to be like the team with Giannis Antetokounmpo as the guy?
Yeah, you know what? When they made the trade from Damian Lillard, I kind of liked it. But then the more you watch the Bucks play with Lillard and the Freak, you said it's not going to work.
Not going to happen.
Damian Lillard's he's a negative on the defensive end of the floor, and it just was the wrong move. Now the injury compounds everything, and the Bucks are backed into a corner they can't get out of. I think they've got to trade the Freak at this point and do kind of what the Celtics might be looking at, a total rebuild in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You're going to get peak value for the Freak if you trade him right now.
Right now, you would, yeah. Sure. See, they should be in position to make a move for Jaylen Brown.
That's true.
To add him to play with Giannis.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but
that'd be a good fit.
I don't know how they are.
But what do you do with the Damian Lillard? He's making, $50 million a year, yeah. And he's not going to hit the court next season.
I know.
How do you overcome something like that?
It's a great question. There's also this. We're going to go in fresh to this because it happened, I think, during our show. We have not heard it yet. But this was earlier today. Denver Nuggets owner Josh Kroenke told the media here the ultimate nightmare scenario.
And, you know, I think that for us as an organization, going into that second apron is not necessarily something that we're scared of. I think that there are rules around it that we needed to be very careful of with our injury history. The wrong person gets injured, and very quickly you're into a scenario where that I never want to have to contemplate, and that's trading number 15. You know, we're very conscious of that pushing forward and, you know, providing the resources that we can when the moment arrives. But that second apron, is it a hard cap? I'm not 100% sure, but it's something that teams are obviously very aware of.
That was going forward. Denver Nuggets owner Josh Kroenke. How do you make that comment?
You don't even make that comment publicly. There's no way you mention you got the best player in the league. You don't even mention, oh, we might have to trade this guy if things go wrong. But you don't. You know, by the way, the Joker just turned 30 in February. When you look at him, doesn't he seem like he's an older?
Oh, you would absolutely guess that if you didn't, yeah.
I mean, I know when he was drafted. You know when he was drafted. We know he's not that old. But when you watch him, he does seem like he's definitely over 30. Just turned 30. He's still got some great years ahead of him. You don't even consider trading that guy.
You never bring that up to your fan base.
Don't mention it.
Ever. Ugh. That is, that's a doozy right there from an owner.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that.
No. All right, ready to get in on the action. First Bet has you covered. Sign up now to access exclusive promotions and bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races every day right from your phone or your computer. Visit firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use the promo code VSIN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com. There you go. Jaylen Brown for Nikola Jokic, straight up.
You think there's any chance Jokic wants out of Denver?
I doubt it. Doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would ever want to go anywhere, right?
He's not a prima donna who makes a bunch of demands, right?
Right.
He's not a Kevin Durant type.
No, I don't see that in him at all.
Trade me, and here's my list of teams where I want to be traded.
Yeah, right. No, I think that he'd be happy on Denver, even if they were like a fringe playoff team.
Well, Nuggets are not that far away from winning another championship, but they got to make a bold move in this offseason.
Well said. Fernando Ramirez on the program coming up next covers the Chargers in Los Angeles. The team won 11 games last year. How much better would they be in year 2 under Jim Harbaugh?